Today is moving, and if I want to,
okay.
Then it's.
I also take this opportunity to welcome PG of Trade and Industry and the team. The Naidu from National Treasury. National Treasury is our resource. They assist us. Honorable members, I think that without any much ado, we need to start. Oh, Nico is hiding there at the back. Okay. Well, and everyone there at the back is welcome. I think honorable members, will have to start. We have a number of apologies. But we need to start. Just to say to the industry, thank you very much for coming this year. Not often that we invite you, especially, I'm not sure if you have appeared in front of this committee, but maybe we should take a round that each and every department appears so that everyone is familiar with what this committee is doing. At the end of the third quarter, you were not here. But I think you had another commitment, and other people did appear on your behalf. We received the apology at this time. But the reason today we invited you, PG, at the end of the third quarter, is the. Is the fact that we notice and understand. Now we take your department as one of those important departments in terms of government policies with respect to job creation and all those kind of things. Now, the worry is that you spend, but to us, what stops the spending is the fact that most of the spending, in inverted commas, happens in those areas, otherwise, where you transfer. And transfers are not necessarily to expenditure. But in the areas where the department is directly responsible, there are challenges. Now, we thought that we should invite you perhaps to get also to understand ourselves. Why is it that there's an under expenditure, especially in areas like your current payments, where at the time of the compilation of this report by National Treasury, that is at the 31st of March, your current payments were at 90%. But also another area which is really of importance that we would really like to have your comment, which is which falls in those areas that are characterized as the government's priorities is underspending on the automotive production and development program. Only 55% that has been spent there. Perhaps we would like to understand. Just before I allow you, TG, to address us and introduce your team, to indicate that in this kind of meetings, we normally invite the portfolio committee. I suspect that there was a communication breakdown because I did see the chairperson of trade and industry this morning. She was not here because we want to work with the portfolio committee. At the end, they are the people who must run with whatever we're discussing here. Could you will introduce yourself and the team.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Lionel October, the Director General, and if I can just briefly introduce the team. I've got Mpo Matla, she's our acting CFO, and then we've got Jody Skaltz, who's our group COO, and she's responsible for our agencies where we make our transfer payments to. Then it's Sarah Chwane. She's what is called sort of the DDG for corporate services and handling all the vacancies and so on. And Cass Weber is in the finance department, and Marx Tibela is our strategy, head of strategy. So Chairman Tank, I think you've gone to the heart of the matter, and I will then try to address the issues you've raised. As indicated, we'll deal with both the quarter, the last quarter, but also seeing that the year has been completed and the statements have now been finally audited, and we have received the advice of the Auditor General that our audit for 2010-2011 is an unqualified audit. Just as you indicated, an overview of our expenditure. Thanks, Honourable Chair. Just as you said, an overview of our expenditure. We were allocated the amount indicated on the slide, and it's to that 6.2 billion, just over 6.2 billion, and that compared to 6.4 in the previous year. But as you know, that was part of the recession period. And that was there was the slight drop in our budget. I'll come to the question of under expenditure, but as you can see, the amount is quite it's about 6%, just over 6% underspending. But even though 6% might sound a bit small, the amount is quite big, as you indicated. It's quite a large amount of underspending, which I will explain. Now, just to go through the detail of that, if I can just explain, DTI has three, let's say, core objectives and three pillars of its work. The first one is what is called creating a fair regulatory environment for both companies and consumers. And that's why we have the competition, we have the Competitions Commission, which has now been transferred, but we've got the companies legislation, which we administer, consumer legislation, consumer agencies. That's the regulatory part of the work which we have, right, from estate agents to small businesses. We're in charge of the regulatory environment. The second big element is industrial development, which is really to get gross capital fixed investment in our manufacturing sector. And then the third part is what we call empowerment, which is really to facilitate the marginalized, whether it's BE, small business, women, and so on, but it's really about empowerment and enterprise development. So those, and as you can see in our budget, which I will come to, it's reflected in that. If we look at our division of our expenditure, you will see that the largest bulk of our expenditure falls in two areas. The one is called the enterprise organization, which is the $3 billion, which is really all our incentives, which we give to the private sector, which we give to the manufacturing sector. Those incentives, as I said, we only oversee, monitor, and so on, but it's a direct payment or co-investment to the private sector. And we lay it out, but it goes to all the sectors. We've got the auto industry, clothing industry, film industry, call centers, small manufacturing enterprises, and so on. But the bulk of our payments is there. Then the second big one is transfer payments. We have, I think at the last count, about 15 agencies still responsible to us, from the National Empowerment Fund to the Companies Commission, who fall under us. And so 80 or close to 90% of our payments of DTI goes to incentives to the private sector, and then to transfer payments to like SAB, South African Bureau of Standards, and so on. Now, if we look at the underspending, as you indicated, on the whole, we received just under 6.2 billion. We spent 5.7 billion, and the variance, as you indicated, is 397 million, which is a very large amount of money. And we came in at 6.42% underspending. Again, by historical standards, we've always been able to keep it below 5% as the target, and this year we exceeded that. But I'll come to the explanation, but really those underspending, like 4% of that 6%, or over 80%, comes from the automotive, from one scheme, which is the automotive investment scheme. So the bulk of the underspending comes from there. And so if it wasn't for the automotive spending, we would have had a underspending of just under 2%. If we then break it down according to economic, the first breakdown was according to our functions or our areas of activity, industrial development, empowerment, and so on. Here we deal with it in terms of the standard economic classification. And again, you will see there that in percentage terms, the unspent amount, as I indicated, again there, when we talk about public corporations and private enterprises, that is essentially where the incentives are, because it's payment to private enterprises. And then a few of it is to public corporations like South African Bureau of Standards, National Empowerment Fund, and so on. And as you can see, as I indicated, the underspending is 3.9.7% in that area. And there is also some, at least a significant underspending in terms of goods and services, which is 1.15%. That's the other indication. I then to go into details, as I've highlighted, that the bulk of the underspending is in one area, where for the automotive industry we were given 538 million. We only spent 294. And the variance is quite big, as you see, 2.43. If I could go to the reasons for the underspending. Now, as you know, we've historically had a support program for the automotive industry. It came into effect in the 90s, and it was called the MIDP scheme, Motor Industry Development Program. Now, that scheme was then reassessed, and we came up with a new scheme, which is and basically, we changed the scheme for two reasons. The one reason is we were challenged because we were facilitating exports. The incentive was based on the exports of the automotive manufacturers like Toyota, BMW, and so on. And as you know, they made big breakthroughs in terms of exporting to the United States. Then we got an objection from the Australians to say they're going to take us to WTO because we are facilitating exports, and the exports is coming into their market, and so on. So we then had to adapt the scheme to make it at least beyond question WTO compliant. And what we changed it into is into a production-based incentive scheme. So in a sense, we say as long as you produce in South Africa, it doesn't matter whether you sell into the domestic market or into the international market, you can, as long as it's based on actual production. The second part is most of the incentives went to the assemblers, which was the OEMs, the Toyotas, the BMWs, and so on. And as you know, most of the jobs are in component manufacturing, because that's a smaller business and so on. So we needed to now that we had embedded, let's say, the big five in the country in terms of the auto assemblers, we now needed to go backwards in the value chain and move into components. So the scheme that we are referring to here, the automotive investment scheme, is really mainly aimed at component manufacturers as well. Now, the scheme came into effect. As I said, we reevaluated the old scheme, brought in a new scheme, and the scheme came into effect in May 2010. There was lots of contestation because obviously we've got a committee consisting of the industry as well, which we have to consult, and we came up with a program. And the committee was properly established in December, and we approved, as indicated, we didn't approve the full amount. What was also remembered is that these in schemes are, in a sense, co-investments. It's not like spending which is completely under your control. If you're going to build a school or a hospital or anything, you can determine the spending pattern. Here, the main investor is the private sector. We only facilitate that investment, so that's why it's a co-investment. So you can only spend your money once the private sector determines to make their spending. And as you know, in terms of the automotive industry, they work on 7-year cycles where they change the models. So they build the plant, they set up their lines, they source some components, and they run it for about 7 years, and then they redo their lines again, and they come up to produce the next model for 7 years. And so we've timed our program according to that cycle as well. So, but what I can report is that in the first quarter of the new year, we have then completed the spending for that sector, and I'll come to it later. But this scheme, we've now secured 14 billion worth of investment in the automotive industry. But I'll come to that. So that, as I said, the main underspending is in that part of the automotive incentive scheme, but it's now done and dusted, and that program is proceeding. The second item which was significant was our accounts to Durco. We've got about 25 foreign economic representatives based in embassies across the world, where we do investment promotion, export promotion, and it's DTI officials based in foreign embassies, 25 offices. Now, and it's mainly, as I said, in the key markets, and then we also have two offices, trade offices, or three trade offices in Geneva, Brussels, and Washington. Now, the way the system works is that because we appoint officials, but in a sense, when they're in the embassy, they fall under the embassy and the ambassador. So we have to pay, we have to receive accounts from Durco, and then we pay. So obviously, there has been delays. It has been raised by the Auditor General that we need to tighten up that relationship with Durco, where we get our accounts in the year and within a period. But as I said, the situation has improved. But that was really the interdepartmental payments between ourselves and Durco. And then the other one, which was one which is also a concern for us, is the vacancies, which I will explain later on. But we still have we are still not happy with the amount of vacancies we have and the pace at which we. The final area where there was a significant area or of the most important underspending is delays in the National Consumer Commission and the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. As you know, we used to have something called Cipro, which registers the companies, and Parliament then amended the Companies Act. The 1973 Companies Act was modernized and brought in line, and Parliament, it was about 3-4 years in Parliament where they had lately, because it's such a significant piece of legislation. It was only finalized in this year. So those the launch of especially the companies and intellectual property commission and the national commission was delayed because of the legislator. It came into effect in May this year, where Parliament or April Parliament adopted that the amendments to the act, and therefore as from May these bodies came into effect. And as I said, there was payments to these commissioners which still then fell under the DTI. Now they are independent agencies, and they are now up and running. But that was the other purpose for the event. Just very quickly to take you through the vacancy issue. As I said, for the full year, as you can see, the vacancy rate is coming down, but it's still at very high levels. It's 18.2%. It used to be. It's down now to 13.2% vacancy rate. We're obviously trying to move it to under 5%. And in terms of the vacancies filled, you will see there that we filled 235 for the full period of the year. For the one quarter, it was for the final quarter, it was 48. And 235 of the whole period. Now, the one issue which I think is one little part is a part of the problem is that, as you can see there, most of the 97 of the 200 vacancies, close to 100 vacancies, was filled by internal promotion. Now, what happens then is that 97 then move into another post, and then their vacancies, then you immediately create another 97 vacancies by virtue of that promotion and so on. So, I mean, I think that's why we've just explained that. But as I said, but still, even in addition to that, there are underspending which we are addressing. The first thing we're doing in terms of addressing the vacancy rate is that, as you know, there's lots of posts in the public service get kept on the books, you know, because people don't want to let go of vacancies, even though for a long period these vacancies are not filled. So we've now established a system of use it or lose it principle, that if people don't fill their vacancies within 3 months, they lose that vacancy, and we use that vacancy then in our priority areas, which, as you indicated, is industrial development, empowerment, and so on, and so that we can install that discipline. And also we get alignment between the actual vacancies that exist and things which are just unfunded vacancies. So that's the one issue we're doing. We're also issuing the turnaround time, as I indicated, where from the time the post becomes vacant to when it's filled, we're setting a target of 3 months, whereafter you lose the post if the division doesn't fill that. And then also we are now within our expo, and as I indicated, we have our head of corporate services here, where on a regular basis we assess the progress. So there has been quite significant progress since for this year and into the new financial year on that, but you'll see that in our financial statements. Then finally, just one final point. As I've explained, the main reason for underspending was in the sense in the area of industrial financing, but we can. I think at least we are happy to report that DTI is now, over the past 2 years, we've had a significant increase in the amount of incentives. After the adoption of the Industrial Policy Action Plan, we have been allocated by National Treasury additional monies, especially for the clothing and textile sector, because they suffered quite heavily during the financial crisis. But And the second one, we've also been given the tax allowance. We can report that both the tax allowance came into effect in December, and it is already we've moving to implement that program. As I indicated, the automotive industry scheme, whilst there was the underspending, has now been finalized. And as I said, and this is not plans, this is not promise, but this $13 billion is the actual investment that has been made in the automotive industry. $9 billion is in the OEM, the assembler section, and $4 billion. But as I said, 20 of the 25,000 jobs is in the components sector. So as I said, we are on track to try to really build a substantial automotive industry in this country. Then also the new scheme that we've rolled out is the clothing and textile competitive program, and we've assisted over 100 companies with that. Again, this scheme is also based on a production basis, where if a company can show that it is going to invest in new machinery, in training, in improving its competitiveness, then based on their level of value addition, we provide them with an incentive. It has preserved a significant amount of jobs in the sector, but there's also a turnaround in this clothing industry from what it was before this program, and we're now having major retailers like Truworths and others who are now sourcing locally, whereas they shifted to Asia for their production. They've now reallocated because of partly, as I said, because of the improved competitiveness of this industry. And then the final achievement, which I say comes from our incentive programs, is the BPOs, or the call centers. We've managed to secure major call center operators, Genpac, Amazon.com, major, we've now got a substantial call center industry, and we now also focusing it much more on services, and not only this, the call centers, and also doing significant training of young people into this industry through the Monietla program, where, as you can see, we currently training for 3,400 people. This program will upscale. We will be training about 60,000 people under the BPO program. So in conclusion, then, that is just to show where the, let's say, that we are getting at least a value for money in terms of this. As I said, the bulk of our incentives goes directly to the private sector, and we can say that they are investing this in jobs and in production. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Titi. I'll hear from the members what they are saying about the achievement that you're spelling out here, but obviously I think we do recognize them. But let me just invite comments and questions from honorable members. Honorable Gerard Blom.
Thank you, Chairperson. Congratulations on the unqualified report, but this doesn't mean that the department is effective enough. Chair, my question is especially on communication and marketing program. That's I think it is item 6. There's a lot of money not spent, about only 74.6%. was spent till the end of the 2010-2011. Now that's such an important aspect. When the economy is bad, they say that you must look to market your product. And it's also very important if you look at what the President said in his State of National Address in the beginning of the year, that at the end of the year, vacancies must be filled. Now, I think if you can increase in this program, or improve on that program, then we can address also the job, creation of new jobs. And I think we are not very happy with what we see here, because that is about 26% of that is what is not spent on communication and marketing programs. Then, Chair, another question is the one of what did you say about, you say that, what is the reasons why was the amendments to the Act was not, was so late? You mentioned, I think it wasn't on the goods and services. And then the lot of invoices, you know, that is unacceptable. There's a lot of invoices that is not clarified in this document, and I think we must urgently look into this. That is on the goods and services. So the explanation of the Department of International Affairs that is not for me good enough. And I think you must look urgently into this matter. And I would like, if possible, to provide me with the answers in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Haraplan. Okay.
Another question. It was actually my first question. That is the one of the ostrich industry. We have tremendous, and that creates a lot of, that's a very important foreign currency that we came from this. You know what the ostrich industry is in chaos at this stage. Farmers are leaving their farms. Farm workers are out of jobs. And what assistance was there in this budget? Is there assistance to the ostrich industry or for the farmers and for the farm workers from your side? I would like to know if there is any assistance that this industry can expect from your side. Thank you, Chair.
Send your comrade from the Southern Cape, from the ostrich land. Comrade Mashiko.
Thanks, Chair, for the presentation. We had the most the positive side of the presentation. What you didn't touch was your... We had mostly the positive side of the presentation, and we didn't hear anything about the monies that were moved and the reasons why they were shifted. You can refer to program number 5 and 7 where monies were shifted, and even the requirements in the transfers and subsidies. If maybe you could explain a little bit why such high amounts were shifted. And again, the enterprise organization, and then another issue is that of at what level are these vacancies of in the department, and how can some of them be easily filled? Because I don't think they are all at that high level that no efforts can be made about filling them. And then is there any... We had a presentation where there was a commitment by DGs, I've forgotten which, that a certain amount of vacancies must... Is there something like that? That efforts must be made, that a certain percentage of vacancies could be filled. And then how effective and good are our entities that the people down there, right, the people who need these incentives and all these good services, empowerment projects, how effective are our agencies to make sure that information goes down to these people, that they know that we knock at that door and be assisted, so that these incentive schemes should definitely be used and not be understood as they are, because it becomes a concern when socio-economic empowerment is hampered because of maybe the problem not being in you, but in the entities. And again, I think your monitoring system should also be addressed, because if there's proper monitoring, I think the results can be seen in the in our economic growth. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashiko. Any other comments? Well, thank you. I think that the issue per SDG that I should have raised up front with you is that, and I suppose that it was also indicated in our invitation, is the issue of the representation. As a policy, we would want to receive these presentations, we say at least 3 days before. Well, it means that to us, it's a policy that would like a department to abide by, to conform, or else we don't want to send you back and say, look, we did not receive your presentations. Up to yesterday, people were struggling yesterday with the department, trying to get the presentations. We were supposed to get them by 4:30 yesterday. Until that time, the presentation could not be called. It's good you brought someone from corporate or section as well, but I think that there's something that really the colleagues are speaking about a capacity of that needs to be built on small business, but I mean from the issue of vacancies. And so the question is really to, as Honorable Mashiko was raising the question of the impact of these vacancies in the department. You're traveling with your acting CFO. We don't even know how much he has been acting, but generally, this issue of acting, I think that's an issue. Honorable Harold Blom is saying that the president at the beginning of, at the State of the Nation address was emphatic that those funded vacancies must be filled. But we're not hearing your plan in terms of what is the plan, what do you intend doing about that. Well, we appreciate the fact that people from internally were promoted to senior positions. I think that maybe it's not something that happens too often, but I think that it's a step in the right direction, because it means that you recognize the talent that exists there. But when we look at the report from National Treasury about trade and industry and many other departments, it attributes some of understanding to the lack of what we call personnel that exists in the department. But we're not receiving. Maybe our invitation did not what to call a state bill around that particular issue. But we would like to understand your plan in terms of the filling of those funded vacancies, so that come next year, when the president's account again, we must be able to tell the nation that what progress has been made in terms of the filling of those vacancies. So only the departments that can assist in doing that. But the other question is really related to my comment would be related to, I think we appreciate the fact that in some areas you don't have control. As you indicated, with the automotive program and the whatever other countries raise in terms of contradictions with the WTO. However, there are internal what we call the programs here, where you program that are meant to empower a small business, small and medium. Honorable Mashiko is raising to what effect, I mean the impact of those. You see, there's something that is confusing us. Since with the establishment of economic development, we're not very clear as this committee. Maybe colleagues in trade and industry and economic portfolio committees, they know who, which agencies fall under whom. But I don't know. For instance, I don't know, is Kula part of? Yeah, maybe it was a good reason so that somebody else could deal with that. But I'm telling you, if I go to my constituency, I say to people, go to Kula. People say, okay, go and represent us to Kula. And I'm sorry to say that other people might. But Kula, my constituency will tell me that Kula does not deliver to them, doesn't assist them. But I don't know which other, in other words, the accessibility of these programs, which are intended to assist South Africans, especially those from disadvantaged communities to create jobs. But if these programs are not accessible to them with their vacancies, I mean, we have high-level, what you call it, agencies, who, the ordinary people. I want my constituents. My constituency is a working-class constituency, but I would like them to access this, or I would like to assist them. When I say I mean each one of us as public representatives. So we like to ensure that they have. How can they access this program? Because if I could just get a straight answer now, Vichy, which are your agents? So that our comments could be direct.
Well, just with regard to
The empowerment area, it's the National Empowerment Fund, the NEF, and then we've got CEDA, which is the non-financial but business support, which is the Small Enterprise Development Agency. Those are the ones, and then we have under the transfer payments, we have the cooperative incentive schemes, Black Business Development Program, and so on, which I will explain later. But then the other ones are, as I said, in the regulatory area, like South African Bureau of Standards, the state agency, and so on. But with regard to small business, Kula, SAMAF, and IDC falls under economic development.
I'll tell you, I'm sure colleagues will agree with me. See, people have come to me about NEF, for instance. People go to NEF and they are being sent from pillar to post. And when, for instance, people like NEF reject people's application, they don't say to people, these are your weaknesses, you need to improve here and there, or refer them somewhere. No, people are told that now your application is unsuccessful and they don't assist. And many of our people are people who do not have these necessary resources or skills. And clearly, people who are there, I'm not sure if they are assisting because we have very good what we call intentions and policies, but many of the people who are there, they don't seem to be sympathetic. I'd really like to speak to NEF one day and say, how does the person from my constituent is able to deal with this. I've tried myself. That's because people have come to me. You hardly get through. You know, you hardly get through. You get people who are very indifferent, you know, when you phone, they're very impatient, you know. And those are the people who are supposed to be serving the small, what you call it, a poor. And as a result, here, some of the programs that are understanding are in those areas. So to us, those areas, maybe the budget is small because it is not spending. But we don't know if we have evaluated the reasons for not spending, for under expenditure, in terms of accessibility, in terms of people. There is a, well, CEDA, it's the responsibility of CEDA to assist people. But are people referred to CEDA? And, well, in terms of the program here, I think the colleague has raised the issues around enterprise that is 82% underspending. See, we really appreciate DG, the challenges that you face with in terms of some of the issues that are beyond your control. However, there are those issues that are within our own, what you call it, jurisdiction. For instance, when we budget, very soon we'll be dealing with the adjustments and so forth. But what is it that motivates us to say, no, in this area, if certain industries are applying for a rollover here, we must approve it, this rollover. When it's not very clear as to whether at the beginning there was actually a need for that, you have your public corporations. I guess the public corporations are those that the transfers, no? And the incentive scheme. In other words, so what you're doing, DG, is that you don't just transfer. You also monitor the spending that side. So that's why, for instance, you have not transferred 100% of the monies to these areas. Yeah, goods and services, 13% underspending. You see, the problem, which is that I think that maybe we need to have more engagement with yourself, not a once-off thing. In my comments, I made a mistake to say that we met you at the end of the third quarter. It was not at the end of the third quarter. It was during the second quarter, during adjustment, when actually the department was at 36%. I think the person who was representing you, we had an argument over the expenditure at the time. But now I'm saying the problem, the challenge is from ourselves is that this kind of distorts the budget. Next year, in October, as I was saying, we're supposed to prove the adjustments and the rollovers and do what is called in terms of the money bills, procedure and related matters act, that governs this committee is called the Budget Review and Recommendation Report, which we expect from our colleagues from the Portfolio Committee to recommend that, well, this area is an important area. But also with us, the spending is important, that it must be reflected on the figures, that surely it is spending and therefore needs that attention. Okay, the other area, I think Honorable Harold Blom did raise the issue that part of the report is saying in goods and services, the receipts are outstanding. It's because of, in other words, the finances are, I mean the resources are committed, except that you're waiting for the receipts to come. Well, that's what we say this side as government. But if you go to the public, you say, no, government is not paying. That's why the president says that at the State of the Nation address, we must pay in 30 days' time. And at the end, if that is the reason for this, it's a pity that you can't get some of the people to hear what is really the problem. Is the problem that they have not submitted the receipt? Or is that ourselves, we have not paid them back? Because I think it's a question of a chicken and egg. The other side is saying that we're not paying in time, and the other side is saying, no, people are not submitting receipts. But, DJ, if there's no other comment from colleagues, maybe I should, if I... Okay, maybe okay. I should allow you, DJ, to comment and the team. Anyone, DJ, we are in your hands. Anyone can make a comment.
Thanks. Let me just deal with some of the questions, and then my colleagues will deal with. I think there was a question about the vacancies specifically.
I'm sorry, DJ. I'm sorry. The other area is payment for capital. What does it involve in the capital? Assets, and because I see as well one other area that has not spent well. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the questions. As I indicated, there's some of the issues regarding the underspending in my colleagues, the communication and marketing underspending, which I think was noted, the issue around the vacancies and our plan in place, and so on. But Jay, coming to just a few of the industry-related issues, just Mr. Gelderblom's question. The first thing was around, I think we've noted the point around the invoices to Durco and the question of invoices. Now, as I indicated, what happens is that obviously our foreign economic representatives, they claim their traveling expenses, their telephone expenses, all that is paid by the embassy. Abroad, and then they, and as you know, there's a number of departments situated in foreign embassies. You've got Department of Agriculture there, you've got Intelligence Services, you've got SARS, and so on. So each of them then gets a let's say the telephone bill is divided between the different departments, and then sent back home for payment by the individual department. As I indicated, it is not a very efficient system, and it has been raised with the delays, because we only get the invoices 6 months or 9 months later, and so on, when people have to square their books for the audited report. As I indicated, it has been identified as a problem. There is now monthly system where invoices must be submitted within the month. Also, a system has been put in place where if a foreign economic representative incurs expenditure, they both send the invoice both to our department and to Durco, so that we then also can monitor the expenses. I think the point has been noted, that there has been a problem, and as I said, we are hopefully in this report you will see that there is the matter has been addressed. And then, as I said, the amendments to the Act, as I said, it was a very substantial, both the Consumer Act and the Companies Act was a substantial revision of our corporate law regime, because we had in place a legislation from 1973. And you know, you had the CCs and you had different kinds of arrangements. So we needed to create one piece of legislation. And that's why, as I said, it was... Parliament was seized with it for a significant period. They made substantial amendments, and it was signed off by Parliament in April and signed off by the President in May, and then that's why the agencies only came into effect as from May on that issue. On the question of the ostrich industry, yes, I think that as I indicated in a presentation which we did yesterday, the large part of our industry are suffering very badly, especially those who are export orientated because of the strong exchange rate. But in a sense, as we put it, there are some sectors who are suffering a double whammy. The one is the exchange rate, which means their revenues have been falling, but also then the cost pressures, which has been going up. Transport costs, electricity costs have been increasing, so many people are struggling. We are to address that problem, and as I said, we've mainly worked with the ostrich industry, Klein Karoo Koöperasie and others. We've mainly worked with them on the marketing side, where we facilitated the exports of both the leather products and the meat, ostrich meat exports, where DTI works very closely with the Ostrich Council, Export Council. But it's not only the ostrich industry, it's a number of sectors which we are, because as you said, we can't do much about the exchange rate, because it's in the hands of international events and so on. But so what we have as a department we are now doing is we're trying to get together the most vulnerable sectors, which is your canning industry, which is your leather industry, which is your issues like the ostrich industry and others, and we will then be trying to come up with a package of support measures for this industry. So as I said, there's nothing different. I mean, like happened with the clothing industry, when they suffered about 3 years ago, we introduced a new incentive scheme, which never existed for the clothing industry before. We always had it for autos. So then, see, I think you've raised a significant point, raised by a number of speakers, is are incentive programs getting to the real people on the ground? Now, I think that as I said, I think that I mean, the best I can say is that this is a major challenge for us. But in terms of our actual expenditure on programs, we've got a small medium enterprise development program, which is about 600 million, which we were allocated. That have all been fully spent. Our cooperative incentive scheme has been fully spent. Our Black Business Supply Development Program has all been fully spent. So whatever we've allocated, we've spent. So there's no underspending with incentive areas. But what I must say is that I understand the problem, because as a country, we haven't what people call the second economy. Our programs have mainly been geared to formal industry. And it has not been gone into the marginal industries. So what we have done, and Mr. Chairman, I think maybe we would need to maybe do a presentation to do, but we did one yesterday to the NCOP on all our incentive schemes, each one of them. So we've got about 10 different incentive schemes. But in broad terms, we introduced new schemes to hit that part of the market. So we introduced the Black Business Supplier Program, where over the past period we've helped about 10,000 companies. We've introduced really recently also the Cooperative Incentive Scheme, which is a new scheme. We were allocated initially 44 million. That has been spent. It's gone up significantly now. So constantly we do want to expand our programs aimed at, let's say, the small businesses, Black business cooperatives, rural companies and so on. But there the problem, as I said, is not underspending. The problem is for us to get more resources. But fortunately, because the programs have been well spent, we have been able to get increased allocations from National Treasury for those programs, as I said. The only scheme, as I said, that we underspent in was the automotive industry, and that, as I said, was very specific to that industry. But in all the others, we sometimes over, there's always more applications than we have money for. So in terms of our SME DP print, I mean, there are many companies that we have to turn down, because obviously we can't subsidize every, we can't give incentives to everybody, but that is what we are. As I said, we are trying to get more resources, and we're going to have to now, especially if we mentioned the case of the ostrich and the leather. There are new industries which are becoming vulnerable. We're going to have to get specific support for them. But fortunately, the clothing industry incentive scheme has been very successful. We've paid up over 600 million there. It's a new scheme, but it's also had a very positive effect. It shows in the jobs. It shows in the change in the industry. And therefore, we feel, as I said, we want to introduce now programs for other industries that are also suffering. Chairman, I think that but as I said, it is a challenge, and we can give you an address on it. I said, as you, on the other agencies, I take the point about the NEF, and we will, we do know that there has not been the sometimes the desired kind of response from the agencies. In terms of what we have now set up, and it's not only for all our incentive schemes, but for agencies and so on. We do have now a unit, both in the Director General's office and in our incentive division, where we want to, where we have a rapid response to queries. Where if there's a complaint about a loan you didn't get or incentive that you didn't get, can phone directly. We will send somebody. Don't have to wait in a queue. We will go out to or meet that person, send somebody to meet with a concerned party. Visit the area, visit the company, look at if they got good grounds for an investment and so on. But as I said, that's also part of our program to the people who are suffering the most from the recession is, in a sense, in the townships and the rural areas. And that's why, so we are really committed to redirecting our resources to those areas. With regard to the 30-day payment. I can report, we didn't put it in the slide, but I can, but we as a DTI, because we introduced this legislation, this memorandum into the cabinet a few years ago. So we're the champions of the 30-day payment, and because we, so we've seen that we do ours, and the bulk of it, we pay in 15 days. So that we can set an example to other departments in this front and so on. See, I'm going to, I think, on the vacancies, as I said, we still have challenges there. I'm going to ask Sarah to maybe just explain about the vacancies.
Thanks, DG, and Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The issue around vacancies, the DG did allude to the challenge, that the challenge really is that firstly, you need to understand our profile in terms of what is the makeup of our staff. And it will talk to the issues that Honorable Mashego was raising, that most of our the people that we have are not in lower positions or lower levels. So it's your middle management, people with degrees, graduates, economists, basically. Those are the kind of people that we are looking at. And now we find ourselves even competing with the private sector for those kind of skills. So you're sitting with a scarce skill, and now you have to fill this. But the other challenge that we pick up is that the DG indicated 97 posts in the past financial year, the year under review, 97 were filled internally, implying that had we gone out, we could have reduced the vacancy by 97. But because we, which is a good thing, that we promoted people internally, it meant then that we couldn't reduce because we promoted and then we were basically at square one because, you know, we didn't really move. So those are the kind of challenges that we have to deal with. Also looking at that the kind of people, the profile, like age-wise, is that the people that we have in the age group of your 30, 35, these are highly mobile people. They're not like the old generation where they're going to stay for 15 years and so forth, so they are highly marketable. So we're also looking at, so we see that also picking up in terms of the retention. So they are highly mobile. So we see that we, although our effort, as we've indicated in the slides, that we are getting, you know, the I mean, look at just the past quarter for this financial year, 69. But and then you find that people are going out. So we're coming up with retention plans, a multi-pronged approach to say, how do we ensure that when we recruit, we retain the people and so forth. In terms of plan, Honorable Chair, the issue, we've indicated that it's a use it or lose it principle. It's a 3 month, so we projectize each and every post. We monitor each post, when became vacant, when did we advertise, when is it going to shortlisting, when is it going into interviews, so we can actually give you the average time for each post. Or, as we speak now, we are from advertising to filling, we are on 2.7 months. So we are doing fairly good in terms of that. The one thing that we believe we need to curb is basically the people leaving. And most of them, they're leaving because of, like I've said, it's the kind of the generation that we have that, are highly mobile. So we must start looking at, creative ways of getting them engaged. In terms of, I think we've talked to the issues of the 3 months and so forth. So from our side, we believe that we are on track in terms of implementing all our plans, and we hope that by the time we come and report next year, it will be a different picture, Chair. Thank you very much.
If I may make a follow-up, through you. I like the last commitment made by Ms. Fan, am I right? Yeah. But we've got a target. But at least out of this 17% now, vacancy rate, by next year, what is it that you hope, by how much do you think that you would have reduced it? We've got a target.
We set a target of.
Putting you on the spot. Just hold on before you respond.
Middle management kind of people. Such people within the organization will move upwards. To director level, chief director level. Is she saying, therefore, you are unable to get people with degrees at a middle management, I suppose is your deputy director level or director downward? Let's try to make an example here. Is it difficult to get such people? With such people, because I just wanted to assist you, because there are many out there with sitting as we speak with those kind of those qualification. It talks to Chairperson an issue of the commitment, just to go out there, engage with the people, try to get these people, because I really don't buy the notion which is to suggest that. Such people are not out there. Really, unless we can sit down and debate that I cannot. What kind of that mid-level skills that cannot be found today in South Africa? Really, just to educate me. Yeah, I do understand this the mobility part of it. I mean that is the fact, but. You were further going to allude on the fact of your retention skills, because you need to have in a global competitive market we are in, you've got to have that kind of a retention skill. But I want to argue the point that these people cannot be found resulting to because I was thinking you were going to say these are highly skilled economists. Right, and then I was going to concur with you, but not immediately. That cannot be correct. It cannot be. We have the graduates coming in and out every year, hundreds of thousands of our kids sitting at home. So it cannot be unless Chairperson, there is something wrong there. Because I mean, in an organizational level like yourself, you should have an what I would call an entry level kind of absorption, because they are coming from school in any way, to absorb them to an organizational culture of your own organization. You need to develop that yourself, because you can't find it in the marketplace in any event, more especially a competitive market place at that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, honorable member. I think maybe it's more for clarification that if you look at the, I was referring to the MMS level. This refers to people who are already on salary levels 11, 12, people who've had, who are in supervisory positions. That's how it's couched. So these are seasoned people. Now, we do have entry level. So if you understand the scale, it starts from 1 to 16. So we're talking about people who are already at 11. So there's no way that you can actually bring people who are inexperienced to come at that level. We do have an internship program that puts people through the entry level. We also have teamed up with varsity to provide, you know, bursaries and so forth, so that we can have that kind of feed into the department. So I think the misunderstandings around that. The MMS, these are supervisory people who are at a much senior level, and I think that's where we're talking about the issues of mobility, because we compete with, you know, with the private sector on that. The target, we have set a target for ourselves, quite a steep one, but we are going to try and achieve that. We've been mooting the 10%. I think that's the target, but because you'll always have that attrition and so forth. So we believe that at 10% is something that we would be able to work towards the end of the year.
Marketing, there was a question about the marketing and the communications budget.
Thanks, Didi, and thank you, Chief. Just to respond, I think the marketing budget was just, we had substantively reviewed that budget on the back of the recession, and there were two main areas that we had decided to approach the work differently. The one was a huge customer satisfaction survey, and we had decided to put that on hold. Pending the cost, the cost were, I think, 5 or 6 million. The other one related to the anti-piracy campaign. And what we had done instead was we had had partnerships, particularly like with the Film and Publications Board in the provinces, where they had a national presence to try and reach and make sure that we targeted individuals instead of going with a national media campaign. We've already started that in this financial year to raise awareness for that particular program. So that media campaign has kicked in, but this related to last year. So that was, I think, the two main areas for substantive savings in the marketing budget. And then I think just on the agencies, I think we've noted the point, and I think going forward in our performance report, in the agencies' reports, quarterly to the department, we will also then have a discussion with them around some of the turnaround times that we can also then make sure that we address those. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Okay, President talks to 74%. Can you just explain it? Or maybe you added the variant before you came to the, which would be another issue for discussion.
Thank you, Chair. I think it was just a typo error in that specific area. It's supposed to be 74.6%. Yes.
Okay.
in your presentation before, because I've gone through the hell of desk work now. You know, I'm getting old now. So, Papa, you have reverted me back, because and otherwise, with all intents and purposes, I would say that was misleading, because it certainly cannot be 100% of 59 minus 44. That cannot be. So it was an error on your part.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Mervon, I don't know if you referred to slide 5.
Slide 5. Why is it that if you look at the expenditure on universities and technicons, only 90%. No. I see it's only 0.02% that is not spent. They can, yeah. And you said about the vacancies. How many of you made, I think, buses available for students? How many of these people are working for the department? If you don't have the answer now, you can provide it for us at a later stage, because I think it's important while you provide buses for students, that you make use of them in the department for experience, such a question. But if they don't have the answer now, check they can provide for us in the later stage.
Now, I think they will have an answer, because I think your question is more on saying what is the principle of taking these people, what are the arrangements. Honorable Mkuli. Okay, teacher, I interrupted you. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Our principle in terms of bursaries is that there's a commitment, there's a contractual obligation, and for both parties, you go there and you come back and really apply whatever that you have, learned back into the department. So we've got those contracts in place at various levels, what we are also looking at is, my members would have heard about the industrial development program that we have as well now, where we're looking at issues of starting from undergraduate to postgraduate and so forth. But we're also saying, how do we ensure that we integrate this into the mainstream, even of our education? Yeah.
In conclusion, just 3 points. Chair, we do give our apologies and take the point about the 3 days distribution of the documents. I think we will ensure that happens when we come before you. Then there's Chairman, as I said, the in terms of our underspending and the incentives and the thing, I want to just clarify that the way our incentive schemes operate is different to many countries. As you know, in Europe they give subsidies. You know, you get it year after year, you get your agricultural subsidy and so on. Our incentive scheme is once off. And you don't get it as before they used to have, for example, if you remember the old Timbazas and the Pozzabellos and Isiteves, you used to have sort of labor-based subsidies, and you get it for 7 years and so on. Ours is very, very targeted, because we've got a limited amount of money. So our things are very targeted, and also we have to see that there is a real investment by the private sector for them to get the subsidy. So it must be based on actual performance. So that's why, as I said, fortunately, because of our experience in all our programs, we've managed to able to allocate all our money, and we've been able to get the commitment to co-invest. But it must remember that we can't, ultimately 90% of the investment is made by the private company. We only give a 10%. In some cases, in small businesses, we give up to 30% of it, depending on that. But, Mr. Chairman, I want to make this point, because, and that's why maybe offer to do a presentation, because as I indicated, we will be asking
for an increase in our incentives because of the problems in this industry. Because whilst we're building our long-term industries, autos, BPOs, and so on, we're having these suffering industries. So we have to, that's why I want to assure you that we are, all our money on these incentives are being spent. It is being well spent, I would argue, but also that we're going to need to increase it if we're going to assist industries. And that's why I think I would really request that we did a presentation yesterday, and we do have a presentation which we can put to you to show where the bulk of our money goes and exactly which companies, how many companies are supported. And as I said, we monitor it because we do it only on a back claim basis. For example, if the company must first spend the money, buy the machinery and so on, and then they send us the let's say they show proof that they have spent the money. Otherwise, as you know, in many countries, that's why they're having problems. You just get people taking the subsidy but not actually doing the actual investment and creating the jobs. And so I thought it's just important to clarify that our incentives operate on that basis. It's not a pure subsidy scheme.
I guess those were your concluding words, DG. No, I think DG, okay, there's still an interest on some follow-up. No, I think that you... I'm sorry, PG. The point that is being raised is that the second last column is about the expenditure. It shows that how you have spent per program.
now as a percentage. Now, I think that what the honourable member is saying is confusing, is that as a last column, you're saying that the percentage that you have given is overall, it's not per program. And that's what he's saying, but now, for someone who has not had the opportunity to sit with us here, will not be able to follow as to exactly what is happening. So it makes difficult a reading. But if you, it was also shown per program, or there was some kind of an explanation somewhere that says that this is what it means, so that we can. I wanted, before we close, to put Ms. Ramasa on the spot. Ms. Ramasa, how long have you been acting?
Since last year, July.
Yes. You see, your teaching is a veteran trade union. Acting, in the acting position. She's an acting CFO. She's been acting since last year, July. She's just over a year now. But I'm just remembering another head for the PC now.
It is a valid point, and what we will see in this weekend, what happened is our CFO is Kumara Naidu, but he was still the CFO, and he was seconded to one of the agencies, SMF, the micro enterprise.
Can I help you, Digi? Let me help you.
Okay.
Thanks for the explanation. But I think what we want is that you must go back and address. This explanation is not very fine. It's fine, but I think that ours is to say, please go back and address it. Well, we look at the weekend people. But TG, I think that now on closing, before I do that, Mr. Naidu, can you get your comments? Do you want to comment somewhere?
I don't have any comments, Chair. Just suffice to say thank you very much for being here. But I think the department has been very modest in many ways, because a lot of the expenditure and a lot of the accomplishments over the financial year, you know, we're very summarized, I guess, for the purpose of the time available. And the DG, you know, will obviously have all of that detail at the disposal. For example, all of the expenditure to the public corporations and the incentive programs, all of those details. It is a very large and complex sector, you know, dealing with trade and industry. You know, and we focus today just on the numbers, which gives a small perspective of a very large reality.
This is being modest. I know he likes to be modest. He doesn't want to blow his own trumpet, you know.
Okay.
And acting CFO, and I won't be doing justice, the Chair, if I don't raise this, because maybe it's going to assist us going forward to put the matter to rest, and probably assist the DG as well. Maybe he may have some constraints that we don't know. But to draw your attention, DG, through your Chair, of the Public Service Act, if I read it correctly, I don't have the act next to me here, but but it seeks to address the issue of a vacant position. Yes, I'm talking to that. If I'm correct, then agree that the DG is unintentional, maybe, because I'm told he is saying he's got the CFO seconded to one of the agencies. That's a very good intention, you know. But it does not negate the fact that because you want there to help, you yourself must break the law. Because the fact of the matter is that you have exceeded a 6-month requirement, you have not filled the position as required by the law, and there may be a commitment. Yeah, because we are in parliament and we are in the mode of parliament. Will assist us just to lay this matter to rest, because leaving it hanging, I'm not hunting for that they were talking about. I'm saying for certain, but I'm saying, Chairperson, the commitment here will maybe to a certain extent put this matter to rest, because we cannot as lawmakers leave it hanging like that. It's one of the
things. He did make a commitment. Maybe you might have missed it.
Oh, okay.
He just put it in a light way.
Over the weekend.
He said we must watch papers over the weekend.
Oh, okay.
That's correct. In other words, yes. Ms. Scott.
Thank you, Chair. I can confirm that it is in the weekend papers this morning. I signed off on those adverts.
It was just on the lighter side. I know you wanted to clarify something.
Where did you?
What? Sorry.
The questions that arose from this adjustment concern us, because I can see that they just didn't refer them in their answers. But we as a committee are aware of the fact that you over-adjusted, because the PFMA doesn't allow the percentage on which you have adjusted. You might not be aware of it, but your requirements were too many in this final adjustment. And I don't know whether National Treasury would like to say something about it, but we can say we are concerned, and we hope you don't plan, and after planning, just start moving these funds around, because you know our PFMA here and there will allow a little movement there, and we subtract, and then we end up not being satisfied as legislatures, because such high adjustments really need to provide us, not just we seeing them on the final adjustment document.
Chair, can I make a proposal? That's actually, my view is that they must come back at the first quarter report, give us feedback on the automotive situation, on the marketing and strategy plan that they are going to change now, and then also to give us detail about the plan of the vacancies at the end of the first quarter report, and we can see what is the progress. Thank you, Chair.
Can I just amend a little bit your proposal? I think your proposal is accepted. But the trading industry will submit their quarterly report to National Treasury. Maybe let's monitor, in other words, what you're saying, that we should monitor in the first quarter. I'm just thinking now, the first quarter has ended, actually. All that is left is us getting a report. Maybe we should, if it's acceptable to you, comment that, maybe. Let's just say, generally, we will monitor all the commitments, in other words, that they have made.
Yeah, I agree. It's only about the monitoring. Because it is job creation, it is very important for the
I agree, it's fantastic. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. I don't remember. Just in closing, Honorable Haraflom, we would like to thank you, TG, for coming, for sharing information with us. I know Honorable Trevor Emmanuel, when he was still the Minister of Finance, he once said in the National Assembly that we all together, we are together in this. It's not about us and them. If you think, we're thinking together. So that is why we are inviting you, so that to draw your attention to some of the areas that we think that perhaps they need to be they need to be attended to. I think that the areas really that Honorable Harold Blom was trying to, I mean, to raise them as a summary, are the areas of concern to us, and we all agree you have made your commitment. Maybe Honorable Harold Blom, the other area that again, the department has committed itself and in terms of actions in the program. In the area of small, what we call the empowerment of your small business, I'm not sure in the departments whether it's economic development or whether it's, I think it's catered for. I know that even in the municipalities, a local economic development department in the provinces to deal with your second economy, for instance. I think that maybe it's the area that just needs a little bit of what you call attention. And the to us, I have watched the National Consumer Act. I think that it has really come with a big, maybe it's in terms of the leadership there. Is a very active, what we call a chairperson who is really going out, you know, to publicize that act. I think she is active, you know. We must give credit, really, where it is due. But in terms of the request, you're interrupting me now. In terms of the increase in the budget generally, now we're going to be in this quarter. We will be dealing with the budget review and recommendation report. I think that is there that the portfolio committee must really. I mean, I think that's an area really that you could raise it more with the portfolio committee, because the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act empowers the portfolio committee's parliament to refocus the budget where they think that if they think that it's a necessity there in that particular area. I mean, resources can be redirected to that. So with the support of the portfolio committee and ourselves, all of us as parliament, I don't think that there should be a reason not to support you. So I'm saying with those few words, I would like to thank you, TG. Okay, and the team. And thank you very much to everyone. Just to honored members, and honored members, we
We haven't dealt with a lot of minutes, you know.
I know that we didn't foresee that this meeting will take this this long. And therefore, we didn't bring the minutes. But I would like us to, we must deal with this minute. Otherwise, now we are hitting at 8 o'clock. As far as the minutes are concerned. But, sorry? And, no, I'm not saying now. I'm saying for now, we have not prepared them. We didn't ask for them to come, so we can't ask. All I'm saying is that we have a backlog, an area that we need to look at in the next meeting, not today. But for today, thank you very much. Tomorrow, the next meeting is on the 17th.
Yeah,
that's on the 17th.